Hello and welcome to the Reaction Podcast. This week we've got guest Will Dry from Our Future, Our Choice, a youth movement dedicated to stopping Brexit, here with us to discuss what they're doing. So, Will, can you tell us a little bit more about what Our Future, Our Choice is doing?
Our Future, Our Choice, or OFAC, is a group of young people who think that Brexit is a complete disaster and that it'd be much better to democratically stop it now whilst we still have a chance, rather than to dedicate the next 30, 40 years of our lives to trying to rejoin the European Union on much worse terms.
But we had an election in 2016, and like it or not, the country voted to leave.
We did have a referendum and the country did vote 52-48. I don't think that's particularly big in referendum terms.
Presidential, if we're thinking about presidential elections, that would there would never be any argument that that wasn't convincing in France, America, for example.
Well, look, I think that we've learnt, and I personally have learnt because I voted leave in the 2016 referendum, and I know that I'm not alone because many people have contacted me since we've launched this group saying I've gone through a very similar experience, that Brexit is very different prospect now to what it was, what it looked like in the 2016 referendum. The climate in 2016 of Europe itself, there was a Eurozone crisis, there was a refugee crisis, there was talk of Turkish membership, there was talk of £350 million per week to the NHS. Literally every single one of those things has either disappeared or been proved to be absolutely false. And now what we see with Brexit is the prospect of being a rule taker from a European Union for half a decade. We see that Brexit is going to cost us 50 billion euros probably to leave. And then we see Europe now contributing the most to global GDP growth of any continent in the world. It's a very different climate we're in now with regard to Brexit and Europe than in 2016. I think we actually probably voted in one of the worst climates we could have possibly voted in. And it's kind of an anomaly in the history of this century so far. Mm. And we're making this huge decision on the basis of what is essentially a historical blip.
That's slightly disingenuous. The opposition to EU membership in the UK, or at least an uneasiness about the European project, has been around in the UK since we joined and before. For 50 years, we've been uneasy about those things. We have opt-outs from all of the key benefits of EU membership. We don't even, we're not even part of the five pillars. You know, it's a historical blip to say that we're sort of a sort of jubilant pro-EU country who wants to get back in. We're not. As much as I don't like that, because I was a Remainer, I hate that we're so parochial in this country. It's true. The UK, it's not a historical blip. There's a long wellspring of historical evidence that shows we don't like it.
And so what I was arguing was that the conditions in Europe probably could not have been much worse with regard to whether or not we were going to vote to stay in or vote to leave.
So you think that if we voted again now, is that what Our Future, Our Choice is trying to make happen, a second referendum? Is that your goal?
Well, I think if you look at the polls, and for what they're worth, 46% of people think that this is the wrong decision, around 40% of people think it's the right decision. That's going in one direction only at the moment.
It seems to be up and down every week, as far as I've seen. Yeah.
Polling's not very...
I completely accept the polling. Let's go back to the historical blip thing, because it's interesting. Yeah. In 2014, I believe it was 22% of people in the British Social Attitudes Survey wanted to actually leave Europe. Now, the question was, like, leave Europe, reform, remain. So there were a few options, but only 22% voted to leave. The British people...
Not voted to leave. There was no... No, that's
sorry.
A poll.
Wanted to leave. Yeah. And that's been the same for the last 15 years when they've done these surveys. The British people have never, when they've been asked this question, remotely had close to a majority. The key point was that once they realised in 2016 that it might be difficult to reform the European Union, or the reforms that they got couldn't look like what they wanted, they decided that it was actually worth leaving. But now, you know, we've actually learned just how important the European Union is to our economy, and we've already seen that by the end of this year, we'll have lost £27 billion relative to what we would have. So you have to lose something before you learn how valuable it is, I think. And we're all going, myself, older people, through this learning process, where people are realising just how important the European Union is to this country.
But again, and come back to a point, I think what's disingenuous about Our Future, Our Choice is you seem to use sort of slim stats about demographic change, about polling, to make these big arguments about historical allegiances, loyalties, all these things. a poll in 2012 that asked people whether they want to leave the European Union or not is not the same as a vote on our constitutional status within Europe. It's also very easy to frame differently. In 2012, there is no alternative. There's no picture of what we could look like outside the EU. There's no wet route to reform within the EU. Over the next few years during the Eurozone crisis, it was shown repeatedly that Europe was not going to give on lots of the stuff that the British people have wanted for a long time. Cameron couldn't get any more of the opt-outs that would have won him the referendum. It was impossible. There was intransigence. And people, if they'd been given an alternative, a Britain in a reformed two-track Europe, I think they would have stayed and they would have been in. That's not what they got. They got on the Remain side nothing. There was no offer. There was no picture of change. Is our future, our choice, going to provide a picture of change for the UK, or is it just going to be obsessed with the European question, about the referendum question?
I'm not personally obsessed with Europe. You know, I'm not up at 1 a.m. reading the various European treaties. Okay, I don't really care for them. There are young people who do, and they, you know, like to wave the European flag, and I love them, they're great guys. But the point is that I'm only arguing now that we have to stop this disaster, because it's absolutely going to prove to be a catastrophic blow to our future, and it's going to prevent us from solving the problems that we face at home, which need absolutely urgent treatment and cannot wait for the Brexit mess to be cleaned up.
But if you got your way, and I want to ask more about how you'd go about it, how would you reconcile the country together again? Because a lot of the stuff on your website seems to be sort of, you may not quite say this, but it's a kind of vibe of, oh, these old people, that they're not really relevant anymore.
No, that's complete. I'm sorry, I completely reject
that. I want to hear why, and I want to hear sort of what you do about all this 52% of the country. Yes, some of them are old. Yes, some of them will be dead by the time we leave the EU, etc., etc. But they're around now, and at the moment, our country is horribly divided. Don't you think that if you got your way, it would be even more divided?
I think that the country is horribly divided. And I do think that whatever happens in the future, it is absolutely pivotal that both sides realise that we have far more in common than what divides us, which is essentially our attitudes towards Europe and a little more on social and cultural stuff. And with regard to our attitudes towards the aging Brexiteer army, the church congregations, blah, blah, blah.
That's a disparaging term. Church congregations.
I'm part of a church congregation. Yeah. I don't think it's that disparaging.
But you know the tone.
Ow! I've gone to a village church for most of my life. Look, I don't think it's disparaging.
Okay.
We're not making a philosophical point about that we should have more of a say over older people. That is not...
That's the ideational substance of what you're saying.
Our choice, not their future.
You
not
use
their
demographic
choice,
arguments to say that within five... projections from the FT on polling that... I mean, who knows what will happen in 5 years' time, whether the Eurozone will send into a new crisis, whether the Mediterranean periphery will explode.
They're arguing on demographic shifts alone, and if you read the article, it would say that. So on demographic shifts alone, as you currently said, the FT predicts, academics predict, that we will be a Remain country in 5 years.
But it's meaningless.
On demographic shifts alone.
The polling that's been done on Remain, Leave, Legions, and then projecting it into demographic shifts, which may or may not happen, polling that may or may not change. I'm Remain, and I think making big arguments about polling and demographic change is not a substitute for thinking clearly about the Remain question.
No, it's not. I kind of agree with you. It's not a philosophical point about who should have more of a say over our future. Okay, I don't actually think that young people should be able to dictate exactly what happens in this country, because we're going to bear the costs or opportunities of whatever we do. I'm just saying that when you embark upon a national project, it is eminently sensible to consider what the people who will live with that project for most of their lives and will have the opportunity to reframe or reconsider or undo that project, actually consider it. Are we seriously going to waste 20, 30 years doing this Brexit project only for young people who grow up and then suddenly, you know, become the leaders of the next generation? To undo it because they want, definitely, in my opinion, to be a part of Europe.
But people, so for example, you say people aged over 50 voted for Brexit. I mean, someone who's at 55 now has probably a good chance of living for another 50 years. because we have such an Asian population. I mean, what do you say, for example, this is my big problem. I think the language is quite dangerous, our future, our choice. And I think in a weird way, it chimes with a certain articulation of what, a very shallow articulation of neoliberalism, which says that people, active citizens, are productive, you know, they own the future because they make themselves, their identities are fluid, they can choose to be European, British, they're international, they work hard, they play hard, all this sort of language of being active participants in society is actually very kind of shallow, and it ignores that our democracy is not just for those people. It's about caring, it's about empathy, it's about caring for old people, for people who have no stake. You know, what place in that vision is for people who have been left behind by globalisation, for example, who live in communities where European membership has not done them many favours, where cheap labour from the Eastern Bloc has not...
Okay, there's no helped, economic evidence.
Has not, no, but it, there it's, is a, zero it's a massive evidence. Grievance case okay, there sorry. That you're just ignoring, for example.
Okay, well, my answer to that would be, I absolutely agree with you.
Okay.
You know, our democracy has to be about all those things that you've mentioned. But this has little to do with our European Union membership. In fact, I would argue that it has a lot to do with our European Union membership. It's an argument for our European Union membership. You can only sort out those left behind communities and towns if you're an economically viable country.
Yeah, let me put it another way. Access to freedom of movement, freedom of work, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, all these freedoms given by the European Union. Access to cheap labour from Eastern Europe has masked our productivity problems for the last 20 years. It has given a massive opt-out for UK politicians not to think about exactly the problems you're talking about.
I think it's boosted productivity in the last 20 years.
And that's true, but it's managed to mask our massive systematic productivity, internal productivity problems, education problems.
No, but a lot of those European workers have come here to teach our kids, to make them more productive.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all
how
true.
Is, so
that's
how is true. A European guy coming here and teaching our kids masking a productivity problem? It seems to me that they're helping us become more productive. And actually, you just refuted me for talking about productivity, and now you're framing an attack upon my side for talking about masking productivity.
It has. For example, the financial sector in the UK, membership for the European Union is incredibly advantageous for the financial sector, for the city.
Mm.
This is one of the biggest parts of our economy, it's like 10%, whatever. It's been incredibly advantageous for the last 20 years for these big multinational, big American banks, for example. Incredibly advantageous. Mm. Our economy relies on the city, tax receipts, all this stuff. It relies on the South East. And the European Union has helped the South East more than any other part of the UK. It's helped the rest of the UK, yeah, in some measure, yeah, exactly for the reasons you're talking about. But structurally, it's advantaged the most prosperous parts of our society, and it's allowed us to get away with not really thinking about how we build a society that works for all. I'm just trying to spin it in the opposite direction.
This is fundamentally wrong. The government's regional economic analysis, which is David Davis's own analysis, says that the North East, under the government's current plan of a free trade deal, would lose 11% of GDP growth over the next 15 years. London would only lose a little bit. London can survive in this global Brexit economy that the Brexiteers want to create. London, it will be fine. The South East will be fine. The areas that will be most hit are the areas which you're saying need to be included in our democracy, and I absolutely agree with you, they do.
Yeah.
So if we're going to wrench ourselves out of the European institution to trade with our most important allies and friends in the world, it's actually the areas like the East Midlands and the North East which will be hit.
So I just want to understand. I see what you're saying. You're disagreeing with Alistair, and you're saying that these people in the North East and these left behind areas are benefiting from European Union membership, but the problem is that they don't really realise that they are, and that's why they voted to leave the EU. So what's your goal? Is it to educate these people and have another referendum, or what's the plan?
No, I'm going to steer away from any terms such as re-education or anything like that.
See what I mean, though?
I do completely see what you mean. What we have to do in this country, and what OFAC will try to do, is mobilise young people like never before and bring our argument, which is that our parents and grandparents, many of whom voted Leave but aren't sure anymore, and our political leaders, who frankly don't have a clue what to do about this whole issue, have a choice. They can go ahead with Brexit, which they absolutely know that no future generation will look upon favourably.
Again, meaningless. Who knows what's going to happen in 20 years? The Eurozone is going to blow up.
Except my conjecture for now, Alistair. Okay. I think most people would agree with it. Or they can do, so they can do this very destructive thing, or they can go about energetically and urgently solving the problems that we all agree around this table need to be solved.
So the idea is a second referendum. That's your method.
We will try and get a referendum on Moorabool.
And you're convinced that if there was a second referendum, that that Remain would win a second time round. And
I think I am convinced. If the Brexiteers campaign on the truth, which is that the Good Friday Agreement is going to get trashed, the economy is not going to do so great, it's going to take 5 years before we get to do anything, it's going to cost 50 billion euros to leave, they wouldn't have won 40% of the vote. They wouldn't have won my vote. They wouldn't have won my parents' vote. They wouldn't have won anybody's vote, okay? They would have won 40%. But, like, the point is, if they campaign on the truth, they would lose heavily. And even in these areas, I think they would lose heavily because you see all the local regional newspapers plaster this figure that the North East is going to get hit 11% growth in the next 15 years. Who in the North East, after knowing that for sure, after knowing what the car companies in Sunderland are saying, is then going to vote to leave this institution, which seems so important for the economic activity in their area?
This is precisely what I was getting at, is that I totally agree that there's a massive tragedy and an irony that the places where Brexit was most popular are the places which will be hurt by Brexit. Will be hurt most viscerally by it. But people voted for it anyway, and people knew it. I think it's much more about identity, and it's much more about a sense of telling elites to go hang, essentially, than it is about pragmatic material interests. And I don't think that by restating the pragmatic economic case for staying in the European Union, just like more cleverly with like more of a youthful spin, will suddenly engender a massive coming together for on the Remain side. I just don't see that happening. And polling, I'm just not sure, is solid enough to show that that Remain would win a second referendum. It's a massive gamble to be playing. This is what I'm getting at. It's a massive gamble to be playing with our future to ask for a second referendum, because if Remain loses, we're getting a harder Brexit than anyone could ever have foreseen after the referendum. We're going to get a really hard Brexit.
Why is that?
Because it's polarising the debate. The only alternative, if we vote again to leave, will be exiting the customs union, exiting the single market. You know,
the government's current policy is to exit those institutions.
Because there's been no alternative offered by the Remain side. There has been no systematic argument to say that we should stay in the customs single market. And you don't want to, from your campaign material, for example, you're saying you welcome a hard Brexit because this will energise young people to smash down borders between the UK and the European Union. It's on your manifesto.
I don't think Oak welcome a hard Brexit. I can categorically say that.
It's polarising the debate, though.
I think, it's an interesting point. I think, firstly, a lot of Remainers in the immediate aftermath of the result did accept the result and did seek a soft Brexit. A lot of people on the Tory benches, a lot of people on the Labour benches. It's only as the destruction and extent, the extent of the destruction of Brexit has become clear, have the likes of Clucra Muna, Anna Soubry and Dominic Grieve become more reluctant to give the government a free pass to harm our future. And Open Britain have been campaigning for the last year and a half, and they're slowly switching now, on the basis that we should stay in the single market and customs union. So people have actually been arguing for those things. And I think this is the key point, why you're wrong.
But that's not what you want. You want to rejoin the European Union 100%. On the terms from which
we
left,
stop Brexit.
For example.
Yeah, absolutely.
But why couldn't we campaign for a pragmatic alternative, which is respecting what happened in 2016, which was a vote to leave, let's be honest, and saying we can still have some of these things, single market, customs union, for example, whilst respecting that we could leave, for example, freedom of movement, freedom of work, for example. And whether that's possible or not would be something to negotiate, and it might not be, but at least to state that eloquently is a better alternative than saying, let's rejoin the terms we left, which is probably unachievable anyway. The European Union aren't going to give us that.
That's not true. We can cancel Article 50 at any point in time and rejoin on the terms we've left. Every European figure has made that clear. Similarly, I think if we wanted, we could Brexit and stay in the single market and customs union. Every European figure has made that clear. The problem with that position is that it is completely unsound, completely illogical, because you essentially become an empty chair in Brussels. And there's a saying in Brussels that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And we will, it applies for whether or not we're in the single market or customs union or outside, because we won't be at the table. But essentially, yes, if we had a soft Brexit, we would become an empty chair, and nobody wants a suboptimal version of what our future could be.
So Jonathan Hill argued in reaction yesterday, saying it actually doesn't make sense for us to be in the single market for services, but it does for goods. So there's a bespoke deal that we could be arguing for where we retain some of these things which work for us anyway and get out of the things which haven't been working for us at all. That's a reasonable statement, isn't it? To try and get out of some of the freedoms?
Well, I haven't read Jonathan Hill's article, but I swear like 80% of our economy is services, so would it really make sense to wrench ourselves out of single market on
but
services?
There's a lot of legislation coming through the European apparatus at the moment which will harm
which we won't be able to influence because we're not in the European Union.
If we're part of it, it will harm our economy.
Well,
and whether,
I take umbrage to that. I think, you look at the economic success of Germany, it's quite clear that European regulation is not this bureaucratic force that a lot of people on the right believe it is.
But we're not Germany, and Germany's success has come at the expense has come down on the backs of young people in the Mediterranean fringe. Let's not forget that. The euro has worked fantastically well for Germany, but young people in Spain, Greece and Italy have had to pay the price repeatedly in massive youth unemployment, all for the sake of the European project, for monetary union, for this. This is what troubles me, is you're saying we speak for young people and we want to be European. But are you speaking for your friends on the continent who've suffered because of the European project, who suffered precisely because of some of the things you're talking about?
That's a very good question. Nigel Farage says this a lot, and it's accurate if you look at the polls. I think that what will happen in the future is that I actually agree with you that a lot of young people in Greece and Spain have had a very raw deal, in part because of a very stringent Eurozone policy.
And emphasise lots of other reasons, but that definitely plays a part, doesn't it?
But let's be frank on two things. There's also a massive domestic failure by domestic politicians to get the economy in order, to get education in order, to make sure people are paying taxes, etc. And secondly, we're not a part of the Eurozone. We're never, ever going to be in a position in which we're forced to comply with a foreign central bank's rules at the expense of our own young people. So it's not really an extremely relevant debate for what we need to discuss in this country over the next 10 months, which is essentially what is best for this country. Is it Brexit, which is looking very bad, or is it staying in the European Union and then solving all of the domestic problems which we all agree we have to solve?
So, because we don't have much time left, I just want to talk to you a bit more about what your method is and your plan, because so your idea is to energise young people, and you're convinced that they could be energised? Because I think I was noticing on your website, a sort of conflation between young people voted strongly to leave the European Union and most young people did vote to leave the European Union, which aren't the same thing. Yes, most young people voted to stay in the European Union, but we don't know how stringent they were in their beliefs. I, for example, voted to remain, but I was on the fence. I thought about voting Brexit. And I think there are a lot of people like me. There was also quite a lot of evidence that the turnout wasn't that high. So I'm just thinking, you want to get sort of a million young people behind you. That's the idea. And then and then what? Would you take over a major party and get a second referendum in a manifesto? Mm. How are you going to make the second referendum happen? How's the pressure group going
to... Well, we'd only need 36,000 young people or 40,000 young people to take over a Conservative Party, wouldn't we? But... No, I completely agree that it is dangerous to assume and be complacent that every Remainer in 2016 remains a Remainer now, like yourselves. But if you do look at the polling, we did a poll with YouGov and the Evening Standard, and firstly, I think 75% of young people still believe this is a mistake and the wrong decision for our future. So the numbers have roughly stayed the same. And then if you look at, would you actually be willing to campaign against Brexit? 40% of young people aged 18 to 24 would be willing to campaign in some form against Brexit. Now, that is an extraordinary number. That's not 40% of people hate Brexit. That's 40% of people hate Brexit so much that they would actually be willing to do something to stop it.
It's still, though, a protest group if you've got people campaigning against Brexit. Great. So what do you do about those? Where do you put them? How do you get them actually reversing the results of the referendum?
So I think young people are really important in this debate for two reasons. Number one, a lot of young people are the reason that Jeremy Corbyn won the Labour leadership contest in the first place. They're also the reason he surged in the 2017 general election. So I think that we, have a very good relationship with Jeremy Corbyn. He understands a lot of what is bad about society at the moment for young people, for people without capital.
And he's done more to help the Brexit cause than any other.
Well, at the moment. But Jeremy's on a journey, and I think
He hasn't changed an opinion since 1972.
On a very slow journey.
He's on a slow journey, but young people can hasten that journey towards full-scale opposition, not appeasement to Brexit.
So that's the plan.
Well, that's one plan.
Take over the Labour Party.
We're going to convince the Labour Party that it is both in their electoral interests and it is absolutely the right thing to do to oppose what will result in a low-tax, deregulated economy which will benefit the richest, not the poorest, which is who Jeremy Corbyn seeks to represent.
How you frame it, are you going over to traditions from the left? Are you going for a more liberal approach or conservative approach? Because this is my problem with it, is at the moment it's a growing thing, and it's only been around for a few weeks. But you need to create your idea background, really, and where you're going to get it from. And what tradition are you going to go for? And again, I was looking at some of the people who backed you, Lord Adonis, for example. He's he's a kind of Lord Nicholson from the thick of it Blairite. Alistair Campbell's come out in favour. A man, the Malcolm Tucker of politics. A man who did actually, more to destroy trust in establishment politicians than his acolytes than most. Are you going to get beyond a kind of Blairite, Macron-style centrist party?
I hope that doesn't make me Ollie Reid. But look, the point is, I don't think it's a particular shock that Remainers back a Remain group. I think, Caroline Lucas is very supportive of what we're up to. We're in talks with several Tory MPs who are interested in what we're doing. We're in talk with several Labour MPs from all parts of the Labour Party. Who are very interested in what we're doing. We're not some centrist group. We've got Tories in our membership, and people running it. We've got Tories, we've got Green Party people, we've got Momentum people, we've got centre-left people. We are, the best thing about this group is that we are not a group of students whining in JCRs. We're a genuine movement of young people, all united in our opposition against Brexit from many places around the country, from many backgrounds and from many political perspectives.
That was Will Dryett speaking to Alistair Benn and Olivia Utley on Our Future, Our Choice. Thanks for listening.